Hey, everybody, and welcome to Views on Vue. Today in our panel, we have Divya Sasidharan, who is a Vue contributor and educator in the community.
Hello, hello.
We also have Eric Hanchett, who is also an educator, has a cool YouTube channel, and author of Vue.js in Action.
Hello, everyone.
We have Ben Hong, who is also a Vue educator, writing a lot of resources and documentation in the Vueniverse.
Hey, everyone.
And Natalia, I am very, very happy to announce, is a core team member of Vue. She's been doing some really awesome work in the Vue ecosystem for a long time, especially in documentation, including for the core docs. I think that, was it just like just this morning you made a contribution to like a new warning in Vue Core?
Yes. Hello, hello there.
Awesome. And I am Chris Fritz, also a member of the core team. I also do a lot of work on documentation. And today our guest is Crystal Campioni.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, folks. I just want to let you know quickly about Netlify. Netlify is a really cool system for hosting what are traditionally known as static sites. However, the real benefit that I've been finding is that I don't have to mess with a back end. I can just set things up. I build the website out. I've been using a system called 11DJS, and you just deploy it. And then anything that you have that you want to do, you can do on the front end. So if you want to pull in some kind of database with Firebase or something else, if you want to collect form data, Netlify provides all kinds of services that make it easy to do all that stuff. If you're trying to do serverless, they have a really, really neat serverless setup that will allow you to deploy your websites without having to deploy a backend, and it'll do some of the work for you. I just love it. So if you're looking for a way that you can actually deploy a website that only has front-end technology in it, gives you all the tools that you typically need for the back-end without having to actually program the back-end, then give them a try. Go check them out at netlify.com.
Crystal, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm currently working as a senior front-end developer at Shopify. And I've been working with front-end development and also design, because I actually started working with design first around 10 years ago. And since then, I've worked in lots of different kinds of projects, from mobile apps and games to virtual reality and web development.
Wow. So no big deal. Just like a lot of the really hard stuff.
A lot of the cool stuff, the fun stuff.
Yeah, that is fun. Like you clearly seem to be attracted to like things that are highly like visual.
Yeah, to be honest, that's the part that I enjoyed the most to work with. So, for example, every time that I hear somebody complaining about CSS because CSS is hard, or because they don't understand why people like CSS, I'm like, why? That's like the most fun part of development for the web, you know?
Yes, thank you, Crystal. I totally agree.
I come from the background of CSS, and design is not as fun as the programming part, but I guess I'm probably in the minority on this. Crystal, would you say you're more of a designer first and then kind of developer, web developer first? Is that how, I kind of looked at your LinkedIn, it looked like you did a lot of design stuff at the beginning of your career.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I think that what happened to me was that I kind of did everything in the beginning, because pretty much everybody did everything in the beginning, like a long time ago. And then it just got to this point that I had to choose between focusing on design or focusing on development, because it was just too much for me to keep up with. And then when I got to this point, I figured that it would be something that I enjoyed more, working with development, especially with interactive stuff. And for example, JavaScript, or even these things that I did with game development. It was something that I enjoyed more than just creating the static designs.
Not going to lie, I miss the days when we were called webmasters.
Yeah.
your talk at VueConf, like, you know, I don't really feel like there's that much of a separation between like design and development. Like the really strong designers and really strong developers like are making beautiful things, which is also highly technical. Like you go into a lot of like really detailed tips in your talk at VueConf about animations and how to, like, you showed us how to build a game and how to organize that in components and like the different tools and libraries that you can use to like make everything work together. And I definitely learned some stuff. Like I have to admit, like I didn't know about that trick that you used to do step animations for like a sprite sheet that just like, you know, moved through an animation. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Which one?
So when you have like the fighter on the ship that is like swinging the sword and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going through motions and it looks very smooth, but it's actually a bunch of still images. And this animation.
Yeah. So it's basically just playing a movie as a, like by using the background image of a div. So that's actually something that I think it's really interesting because you can implement really, really like crazy complex animations in a way that is super simple to actually implement because it's just a CSS animation. And you're just like moving some keyframes on the background of some HTML element. And that's actually what Twitter does on their heart button. When you click on it, they have like all of these things moving around. And it's also a CSS background animation.
So how did you, like, for people who might see this talk, and I strongly recommend checking it out, the videos should all be live by the time you hear this on viewmastery.com. Check out Crystal Campione's talk and all the other talks. And what Crystal built was really, really cool. It was this, relatively simple game because, you know, you don't want to go too complex in a talk, but it had a lot of like complex tricks in there that like you would actually use when building a game or like building any kind of like really interesting and highly visual interface. So how do people learn how to do this kind of stuff? What was your journey like?
Yeah, just one thing that I would just like to mention is that I didn't actually create the game itself. Like I just created the interface for the game because the actual game logic when you press the buttons and you change the life values and this kind of thing was from this guy called Maximilian Schwarzmüller because I actually saw his game when I was watching his video courses, when I was learning to program in Vue. And then because I saw his example, I said, okay, that's really nice. So maybe I can make this interface look closer to an actual game because it was just like buttons and a life bar. So what I did was like use his game example that was basically just one game file that you could press some buttons to change the values of variables. And then I built the interface with the components and the actual characters and everything on top of that. Just so that I give credit to the people so that we don't forget about that. About my background, actually what happened was that when I started, I was like kind of a web designer / programmer doing kind of like everything. And because I really liked the visual aspects of it, I was just trying to learn by trying to understand how people implemented other stuff. And some years ago, I actually did attended a course about arts and design and programming for video games in Vancouver, and that helped me quite a lot because I actually learned how to like create 3D models, and I learned about color theory, and I did like life drawings and all of these kinds of things that are more focused on the visual aspects of things. That for me, up to that moment, was more kind of like guessing what to do, and I didn't have a technical background for design before I attended this course. So this was something that helped me quite a lot. And also because I actually learned about how to program shaders and how to automate processes in 3D environments and this kind of thing. This is definitely something that I can apply when I'm creating a new project. For example, like the one that I showed on my talk in the conference.
Maximilian, another fellow German like yourself, we talked about him in our last podcast. He was like the gateway drug for a lot of Vue developers to get into Vue because his courses on Udemy is pretty popular. Was that like your first exposure to Vue, taking his course?
Yeah, definitely. Because actually, like what happened was that I was working for another company before, and they had this goal of modernizing their tech stack that was pretty old. So basically what we did was that everybody sat together and we started making comparisons between the like popular JavaScript frameworks. And in the end, we decided that we would go for Vue because of many reasons. So then that's why like I decided to take his course try to understand how it works. And I actually really liked it. I think it's a pretty interesting course, and it's easy to follow and it's easy to understand. So I really liked it.
Very cool.
So it sounds like you watched the Maximilian Schwarzmüller's course on Udemy, and for like the and you also took this course. Is this at a university or?
It was a vocational course, a 1-year course in an institution called Van Arts in Vancouver.
Okay, cool. And so how did you hear about that? Did you hear about that from like other developers or?
About this specific course?
Yeah.
It was kind of like I wanted to move to Vancouver to try to live in Canada for a while. And I just Googled it and it seemed like a pretty interesting subject to study. So basically that's why I decided to attend this specific college.
Got it. And then for the CSS stuff and a lot of the view resources that you used, like the transition component and transition group, like you talked about like watching what other people were building and you know seeing like how they're using these tools. Like can you name some examples of like specific blogs or people that you'd recommend following, you know, for people who want to learn like how really cool things can be built using these technologies?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that my main reference is definitely going to be Sarah Dresner because she has a lot of really cool material about this sort of thing. And yeah, like my main reference. And also, I think that there
are...
Yeah. And I think that there are really there are some challenges that are really nice for you to practice this sort of thing. Like there is one of those 100 days of code challenges, and there was this other one that I forgot the name, but it was basically for people to create drawings purely with CSS, and then like on top of that you could understand how to animate the drawings that you created purely with CSS. And then when you start like understanding how these things work in isolation, it kind of gets easier for you to understand how to integrate them into a project.
Cool. And how did you pick, like speaking of projects, how did you end up picking this specific project? You know, you talked about, you know, watching Maximilian's video where he, you know, he demonstrated a simpler interface for this game. How do you choose how to pick a project? Because I think that's something that's very important that people often don't really talk about. It's just like, how do you find ways to practice the skills that you're learning?
Yeah, I guess that like, for me specifically, what happens is that I have this one idea and then I get super excited about like trying to make that work. And then I just sit down and I try to make it work. And especially when I'm learning something new, I think that that's really useful because working on projects that I'm excited about actually allow me to better understand the thing that I'm trying to learn. So this is actually one of the examples of something that happened exactly like this, because I watched this course after I had worked with games in different scenarios. And then when I saw the game that he created with Vue, I was like, that's really cool. So maybe I can just like try to see if I can use the knowledge that I have from my previous projects into this new technology that I'm trying to learn now.
Actually, I think picking this topic for the talk was a great idea because many people, including me, had this wow moment like, oh my God, I know this game. I was watching this course and now she re-implements it with animations. It was so cool. Like, thank you for this topic. It was great.
Yeah, I'm really, really glad that you enjoyed it. Cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I've said this on air yet, but Crystal's talk was definitely one of my favorites. It was in my top two, for sure, from ViewConf. I really, really loved it.
That's an honor, especially because like there were so many really, really cool talks on the conference. That's like a really hard competition going on there.
Yeah, it's tricky to talk about this because like four of UConf US speakers, including a guest, are actually right now on the podcast.
That is true.
Which means Chris threw a lot of shade on some people.
No, I didn't say who.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, Crystal's absolutely right. There were a lot of really good talks. But I'm not denying, definitely.
Like,
above and beyond, like it's the kind of talk that like I aspire to.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think just like the ability to show, like what Natalia was saying, something that people would have come across in their learnings, like that Udemy course is really popular. And then like going from that and taking that and then just scaling it is really cool. Because it's totally tangible. Then people are like, because usually when you build a demo, people don't know where you started. They don't know what your starting point is. But in this case, it's super clear where the starting point was and where the ending point of the course was and then where she took it further, which is really neat. So if anything, it like it's inspiring to a lot of people because if you're learning Vue, using a course or whatever, a lot of the demos are not like just like finished products in a sense. So it's like a good starting point, and then you can take that further if you want to, which is cool.
Yeah, and so for those that are eventually going to watch the video and see the cool animations, Crystal, like I noticed that you have all these like beautiful sprites and backgrounds. Like, are these things that you created yourself, or do you have like a resource that you use for these kind of things?
Yeah, so it's kind of mixed. Like, I did the illustrations for the ship and the oceans and like the whole background thing, and for the Viking. But the knights, I didn't illustrate myself because it was just too much work to create all of those sprite animations. So I took it from one of those free assets for video games websites. But I can send you guys the link afterwards because I don't remember.
Yeah, I think that would be super helpful because I think a lot of developers want to build like these sort of cool animation pieces, but maybe they get blocked by the inability to like create their own. So yeah, I think we'll definitely have the link to those in the show notes for those interested.
Yeah,
in doing
more. Definitely, especially because there are lots of really cool resources for game art online for free. So definitely, it's something that is really interesting to look into.
Cool. Looking forward to those.
So Crystal, I'm kind of curious. What would you say is like your favorite animation tip that you feel like not enough people know about?
I think that like playing around with the index of stuff in lists to change the way that the animation works is something that not enough people talk about, I guess. Because basically it's such a silly thing because it's just like the position of that element in a specific list. And you can create all sorts of different kinds of staggering animations or sequential steps and stuff like that based on just like the index. For example, the background of the video game, the clouds that are moving around, all of the animations for the clouds is basically just like the same cloud, but I'm rendering it 10 times or 5 times or something like that. And then I just multiply the index of the cloud based and something else. Like, for example, a value for changing the size of the cloud so that I can have like smaller and bigger ones. And also the animation duration so that I can have like clouds that are moving faster or moving slower and this kind of thing. And I think that this is like one of the things that when I figured out how to make it work, I was like, this is really cool, you know? And it's super simple to implement. So that's definitely like one of the things.
So what kind of tools or libraries do you need to implement that?
Not much, actually. Like, for example, the clouds is just a V4 loop that is rendering all of the different clouds on the screen. And then what I'm doing is that I have another for loop in the SAS file. And then, like, I basically render I count the same amount of clouds that I'm rendering on the markup in the SAS file. So if I have, like, 5 clouds being rendered on the markup, I'm just going to have a for loop that counts from up to 5. And then I have this index that I can use to make small adjustments to all sorts of CSS properties.
So you're using like an nth selector for that?
Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. Like a lot of people, like a lot of developers, when they think like, CSS isn't really that important, and then they could end up like over-engineering a solution for what you just talked about, where it's like, it's actually just the same cloud. I just have different variations, and I have some like programming that I'm doing in SAS to make that really simple, rather than, you know, trying to create like a separate component for every single cloud or something like that.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the sort of thing. Like, I think that CSS is really, really powerful, and it's getting more and more powerful with the newer stuff that is currently being built. So we shouldn't underestimate CSS, I guess.
I 100% agree. It deserves respect.
Amen.
So this is actually something I'm kind of curious about for the other people, especially Divya, because Divya also creates like really, really nice demos for her talks. If you haven't seen her talks, definitely just like search for Divya Sasidharan, and you'll see some really cool demos as well. So Divya, answering the same question, what are some of your favorite animation tips, or like what's your, maybe one that not enough people know about?
I feel like this is a hard one to answer because I'm not an animation expert at all. Like a lot of Crystal's demos were like beautiful. I was like, oh my gosh.
I feel like you don't give yourself enough credit.
possibly. Like it's not really a tip, but it's something that I try to keep in mind, which is a lot of the stuff I build is trial and error to just kind of see if it works or not. Because sometimes there's an idea that I have in my head and then like trying to translate it into code. For me, it takes a bit for me to understand like, okay, what exactly do I need to do? And so it is like a frustrating process. Like people don't see that because they're like, oh, it's so cool at the end.
So I think you just invented it from your mind.
And yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, you don't know how much work this took, a lot. Because it's just like a matter of understanding just like various animation concepts. And I'm not a designer. I'm someone who enjoys design and is like an amateur because I'm not professionally trained. But yeah, just like understanding like easing and whether an animation is smooth and how it works requires a lot of like, for me, trial and error, because I don't have like a formula or solution for it. So
for those who might not be aware, what do you mean by easing?
So if you want like a transition to happen, usually it's like a transition has a start and a stop. And so if you don't do anything, it just starts and it stops. And like usually the time frame sometimes is like depends on like 1 second or 2 seconds or however much you want it. But mm-hmm. It essentially like the in-between is the transition that happens. So the longer time there is between start and end, the like smoother the transition. Not necessarily, because if it takes too long, it can just be like kind of staccato. Like essentially when you think of animation, it's all in frames. So from start to finish, there's frames in between. And so to ease means that you have like a smooth move from one frame to the next. So it's trying to optimize the timing that happens, whether you're easing in. So easing in is like one way of doing it. Easing out is another way of transitioning, where you're trying to optimize whether it's faster at the beginning of the animation and slows down, or whether it's slow at the beginning or fast at the end. So like that's what I mean when I talk about easing.
So is easing also what people are doing when you have something that like bounces or something like that?
Do people call it easing? I feel like that's called like ease in and out or something, or like bounce or something. Like there's all these terminology for it.
But it basically shows like, you know, like how fast you're moving through the different frames at various points in the animation.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like a graph. I'm going to have to find exactly where this is, but there's a resource that shows you on a graph how that looks like.
So I think it's cubicbezier.com or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So it shows you a curve that gives you a visual sense of what easing is and how that looks like. And for me, it's really useful because it shows you the graph. And then when you hover over the image, it shows you like a ball and like how it moves across the graph to give you a sense of like what that looks like. It's kind of hard to translate that movement into the specific animation you're trying to make, but it gives you a visual sense of like what to expect. So yeah, that resource I found is really good for that. I think it's Cubic Bezier. That's one of them.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, cubicbezier.com. And it actually shows you like what the animation will look like. So you don't have to imagine it. You know, like you were just talking about trial and error. Like I can't imagine how things will look before I code them either. I know Sarah Drasner can do this sometimes, where she can just like write out the numbers for like a cubic Bezier curve. And it's like, oh yeah, that's what I had in my head. And I cannot do that. I'm not at that level yet.
I am only going to believe that when I actually see her doing it, because it's impossible. Jesus Christ, that's crazy.
That's not even the most impressive. Like, I swear, like, you know, like path data for an SVG?
Mm-hmm.
She can actually like type out the path data and understand what's happening and like draw a curve that way.
Oh yeah.
I do not understand how.
Yeah, that one requires like an like geometry in a set, or if you think about things as like a graph paper, and then you just, it's difficult to do. Like I taught a class on this where it was basically data visualization, and I was trying to explain SVGs and how paths work. And I had students like draw on graph paper. And that was actually a really good tool for them because it's like, it makes you think in terms of like pixels and like where exactly the XY coordinate is because it's flipped on the browser. Yeah. But also the easing thing I was talking about is easings.net, which is kind of similar, but this one gives you a huge like table of all the things, all the possible. So there's like ease in sign, ease out sign, ease in expo, ease out quint. And so,
oh, nice.
Yeah, because there's a lot of things that I don't use, but it's like it might be useful at some point.
So basically, it helps you make like the exact kind of transition or animation that you want without having to be Sarah Dresner.
Yeah, in a sense. Yeah. I mean, we always aspire. We're all like Dres nerds.
Dres nerds. I love that.
Dres nerds.
This shirt's.
I actually haven't heard that, but I love that.
Yeah, I think
I'm totally addressed.
Her husband created basically, I think they were having a conversation and then that came up and then her husband was like, we're going to create shirts and created a shirt that said Dres Nerd on it. And people have been wearing them.
I'm Googling it and trying to look for this.
I'm going to find a link and drop into the show notes.
I have seen a guy in this t-shirt at JS Heroes. It was, I think, Jason Langdorf, who is a maintainer of Gatsby. It was really funny.
That's awesome.
So, Natalia, answering the same question, do you have any like animation tips that you would give people?
Oh, Chris, I'm so bad at CSS, and I consider it as a, like additional magic to our work. So actually, my best animation is like building a breakout with simple rectangles with RxJS. It's the only thing. And I really love using RxJS for animations and games.
Mm. What would you say is the advantage for people who don't know what RxJS is? Like, when do they know they might want to check it out?
I think the best tip would be just wait until my JS Heroes talk will be released as a video and watch it because I'm like building a game on the stage as well. But it's not that piece of art Crystal can build. It's just graphics in terms of graphics.
Got it. That's cool. I don't think I've used RxJS for animations before, so I'm really looking forward to that talk. I can see how it would help.
Don't what about you, Beth? Started.
Yeah, we'll save that for a different podcast, for a different episode. Ben, what about you? Do you have any animation tips that like you really think people should know about?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, none of my work with animation coding is one of the things I've been meaning to get back into, but doing a lot of presentation. But for those working in like Keynote and PowerPoint, check out Magic Move. Magic Move is a life, like total game changer when it comes to slides. So
yes, I love Magic Move.
Magic Move was heavily featured in my ViewConf talk.
Yes. Mine too. Everything was built with Magic Move.
Basically, for those who don't know what it is, you start with one slide and you tell it where the object is and you duplicate the slide to tell it to do Magic Move. You reposition the object and it'll just do all the magic calculations and it's fantastic.
Magically move the object.
Yep. It's great.
Yeah, and that includes like really cool... You can do really cool like code transitions, or at least I think they're really cool. If you check out my slides, which I'll drop in the show notes for ViewConf, you can see an example of like the code moving. And actually, if the video is online, you can just check that out too.
What about you, Chris? Any animation tips?
Gosh, GSAP is a really awesome library for doing like complex animations and timelines. I've definitely learned a lot from Sarah Dresner about how to use GSAP in a smarter way. If you check out her articles on CSS tricks and other places, you can learn a lot.
Chris also did this really cool View London logo animation with like, what is it like? RenderJS? You have to drop that in the show notes.
Here. Oh, with
it's like the spinning triangles, or like not even triangles. They're 3D objects. It was like AR. You could like zoom and change.
Yeah, I used A-Frame.
A-Frame. That's what it is.
Yeah, I also have a talk on visualizations in Vue using SVG, Canvas, and WebGL and comparing like those techniques and providing a lot of resources. So I'll add a link to that in the show notes too for people who are interested.
Yeah, it's also, I think it's in the Vue Amsterdam, right? Recording? But People should
check it out. I've given that talk a few times, so I'll put in the latest one.
It's a great one. Oh, snap. Divya just dropped the Drasner t-shirt.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Divya.
Yeah. You need to wear it in droves.
I was going to say, I guess I know what I'm buying in the next 5 minutes.
So I almost feel a little bit weird about buying it. Like, should I wear it around Sarah or not?
I think there's a lot of people, like, there's a lot of people who do, and then they've been using like the hashtag Drasnud on Twitter. And so there's like a bunch of the developers, like from Nigeria, like CodeBeast being one of them, and like because of ConcatenateConf, like bought a bunch of those shirts, and then like Jason Langstorff, I think, from Gatsby's wore it, and like while he was at a conference with Sarah. So yeah, it's a thing.
Nice.
This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give you full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open sourced Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code DevChat at Sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code DevChat at Sentry.io.
So Crystal, I was wondering, when you're teaching people like how to do animation stuff, what do you find are some of the like best tools in Vue specifically that help people build animations that, you know, maybe they wouldn't be able to do with jQuery or maybe wouldn't be available with some other frameworks?
Yeah, so I think that like the one of the things that I use the most is computed properties, just because it's super useful when you're like, when you want to trigger some animation or change the appearance of something based on something else that happened, computed properties are really, really good for that. And of course, the transition tags are also...
First, for computer properties, what's an example of where you use that in your game?
On the game, I'm not sure that I actually use it on the game, but I used it on one of the examples that I presented afterwards. There was this mobile button thing that you could click on the button and then you would like have a sequence of child buttons that would appear. It's actually a really common pattern that would appear seen in like mobile interfaces. And it's basically like one button, and when you click on it, a sequence of smaller buttons come out of the main button. And for this specific thing, it's really useful because you can just like watch for changes on the variable that defines if the smaller buttons are visible or not. And then you can do all sorts of calculations based on this specific variable. And also that thing of playing with the index again, because the same thing that happened with the clouds, I can actually call a method and pass the index of that child button in the array of buttons to actually calculate, for example, the bottom property in the style, so that I can like automatically have the distance from one button to the next one based on the index.
Nice. And then you also talked about the transition component.
Yeah, the transition component is also something that I think it's really, really nice because it's just so much easier for you to just use a transition tag, and then you have access to all of the steps when you're like removing or inserting something into the DOM without having to actually like implement that yourself, which is a lot more work. So that's also something that I think is really powerful.
So what is it? What does it help you do exactly?
Yeah, for example, on the game, I'm using the transition tag for toggling the menus on the game. So basically, you have this button that you can click that says like start game. And then there is a little animation that basically just moves the whole thing off screen. And then the actual game controls jump on the screen. And this is something that was implemented with the transition tag quite easily.
Nice. So it automatically will like add and remove classes for like different points in the animation and stuff like that, or the transition?
Exactly, exactly. And that's one of the things that I think it's really nice about implementing animations with Vue specifically, just because you don't have to keep like reinventing the wheel or implementing stuff from scratch. You know, it's just there for you to use it. So it's really, really cool.
And in your talk, you also mentioned the transition group component.
Yeah, that's actually like dark magic, you know.
Because, dark magic.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. The first time that I used that thing, I was like, that's bizarre, you know, because I didn't have to do anything. I just put the items inside of this transition group thing, and it automatically does everything for me. So it's dark magic, really, really dark stuff.
So what is it doing for you?
I think it's implementing some sort of like flip animations. So basically what it does is that it moves, for example, if I have the example that I show on the talk is that I have all of these cards, and then I can change the order of the cards or insert or remove cards. And basically it just automatically calculates the positions of everything and smoothly moves every card to its new position. And this is not something that I had to implement. It was just like there, and I just used it.
Nice. And we'll drop some links to the docs and how to use some of these features in Vue that Crystal's talking about.
Really, really powerful stuff.
Cool.
There's also the talk that Rachel Neighbors gave last year at VueConf, which is like really good in terms of explaining transition elements and how to like do like cool animations using Vue components, which I think is like worth a watch.
That talk is actually really, really good. And I really like the drawings, like the way that she presented the examples. It's really cool.
Yeah, she did like such a wonderful job with it.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite talks and a lot of people's favorite talk of last year's VueConf.
Yeah. I'm hoping she does more Vue stuff because she's joined the React team officially. So we'll see.
That's right.
We'll see. It's like a battle for talent between React and Vue.
I don't feel like it's a battle. We both have a lot of cool people.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I just meant that as a joke, but yeah.
No, it's not. We're not adversarial. Rachel and I are still on very good terms.
So, Crystal, this is more of, I guess, I was looking into the Van Arts program that you had mentioned that you had taken, because I think that was your first like official exposure to design. Was that correct?
It wasn't my first exposure to design, but I guess it was more like learning the theory behind the things that I was just like guessing how to do up to that moment.
Got it. Okay, so, you know, I think there are a lot of developers who are, you know, obviously interested in sort of getting their feet wet with design and those sort of things. Like, would you recommend them checking out, like, you know, like a graphic design program near them? Or, like, do you know of any online resources that you might recommend for developers looking to get, you know, more involved with, you know, this sort of animation and that sort of thing?
Yeah, about online resources specifically for design, I'm not super familiar with it because basically, like, I learned a bunch of things while I was attending this course. And because like the main goal is for people to graduate in game arts and design, which is the name of the course that I did, and basically start working with games. So it was really focused on like one specific thing, which is like everything related to games. And because games are such complicated things to do, it's a course that actually offers really different classes. Like I learned about color theory, but I also learned about programming in Python in 3D environments. And I also learned about shaders and lots of different things. So in my experience, like this specific course was really interesting for me to understand how to connect all of these different pieces of information when creating something new.
That's helpful. Thank you.
I think Tessa, at one point when I chatted with her, I think on one of the last recordings, was mentioning that she's doing a graphic design or design course that Shillington offers, and they're just like a professional certificate style program where you can, I forget how long it is. I think it's 3 months full time or something like that. So it's kind of like a design boot camp, which I think is really neat because it's something that I would totally take just to like ramp up on design skills, because there's a lot of like people learning development skills, but I think there's so much value of like developers learning design skills. And just to bring that around, there's a course that like Sarah Drasner did called Design for Developers that's on Frontend Masters. And it's a wonderful course that I would highly recommend just because it gives you a high level understanding of typography, layout, just like visual elements that you can use directly into your applications just to make it look a lot more compelling.
I would strongly second that.
I want to mention one more book, actually about design and development and design for developers, and it's Refactoring UI by Adam Wasson. It's actually great if you never tried to design your website and you want to.
Yeah, and also like now that I've remembered, actually I think that one of the interesting aspects for developers to learn about when we talk about design is actually about user experience, because I think that a lot of people don't pay enough attention to that. And I think that that's actually something that is super useful for us as developers to learn about. There is a book, the name is Don't Make Me Think. And I think
it's so good.
Book about user experience as a whole, and it's a really easy to read, and I totally recommend everybody to read it.
Yeah, and if people check it out, make sure to buy Don't Make Me Think Revisited. That's the updated one.
Oh yeah, please, because like the original one was written like many years ago, so the examples are a bit outdated, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Talking about user experience, you know, sometimes we're just talking about like making things pretty. And I'm going to play devil's advocate for a little bit. What's really the point of making things pretty? Is that something that's really valuable? Like making things like, you know, feel good and like have like, you know, nice animations. Isn't that all just like extra stuff that doesn't really matter?
Because you agree? I do. And this was actually like one
I
of
disagree
the things
with
that but the thing is that like, I don't agree when people think about design as art, you know? Because there are lots of people that think that design is almost the same as art, and I totally don't agree with that. I think that design is a technical skill the same way that programming is. And that's why I think that like it's something that you can learn, and there are books about it and this sort of thing. So it's not something that I think that it's something that you sit down and you're like inspired and you design an interface. You know, it's not like that. And I don't think that making things pretty actually has any value in terms of making things more usable or making it easier for people to understand what the point of the application is, or to understand what your brand is about. So I agree. I don't think that making things pretty per se is something that is interesting. I think that what is interesting is when you can use the techniques from design as a body of study to actually combine the aesthetics of something with the functionality of that something.
Yeah, I do agree that sometimes like, you know, animations can be overused and can sometimes not be additive. You know, like you could just have a lot of things happening on the screen and it could be really distracting. But there are also so many times when making things prettier like makes the difference. Like when I'm choosing like a to-do app or a habit tracking app or, you know, like, you know, different websites that offer similar services. A lot of times I go with like what's prettiest because they all essentially do the same thing. And yeah. I just want to like feels the best to me.
Definitely. But that's what I was saying. Like, it's not just because it's pretty. It's probably because, I don't know, you found that it was pretty because it was easier for you to find the information that you wanted or to organize the things that you were trying to do or something else, you know? Just because it was pretty, I'm not sure that that's actually like why, you know, people do things.
Well, sure, I'm oversimplifying a little bit, but I think the prettiness like often makes it easier to use. Like when you have an animation and, you know, you're like moving something to a folder, and you know, you click on the button to move it to a folder, and then like you can see it actually like go to that folder.
Yeah, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't make things pretty or don't implement animations, because that's literally what I do.
Listen, I think I am valuable.
But I mean, I think that it's important to keep in mind that those things should be part of a goal. You know, you're not supposed to just implement animations because you think it's nice to implement animations everywhere. You know, especially because it can be super distracting. Like on my MacBook, I lots of times when I toggle the mode that you can disable the animations and the transitions when you're like moving from one desktop to the other and this kind of thing. Just because when I'm working, I find that that's distracting, you know? And again, I think that my work is super important. I'm not saying that people should not implement animations, but I think that it has to be with a purpose, you know? And actually, the material design guidelines for animations are a really good resource in terms of what you should or you should not do for animating things in the UI, because they have like lots of actual examples of like do and don't, you know? And also guidelines that you can actually follow in terms of timings for animations, or if you like put a bunch of animate a bunch of things on the screen, you can actually make it more distracting than actually like reinforcing the action that the user is doing. Because, for example, what you just mentioned about dragging some file into the trash totally makes sense from a user perspective to have that animation happening. But if you were doing that and there was something else crazy going on the screen while you were doing that, I don't think that it would be such a nice experience.
Yeah, and to sort of go on that too, I think pretty is one way to put it, but also I think when you see something that's aesthetically pleasing, it shows like a level of quality, I think, that the developers have put time into. I think a lot of us have that experience of downloading apps that are free, but you can just tell like there's just very little work put into like the design. And I think when things have design efforts put into it, I mean, to Crystal's point, I think it makes us for this overall just really great experience. So,
and yeah. We trust it more. We trust
exactly.
That a lot.
Inherently, we just trust
the
it.
The technical details.
Right. I'd gladly pay money for something that looks better just because I assume that it is made with more love and care.
And you're basically spending time there.
And I guess that's my main point. I'm not saying that design is not important. I'm saying that it's super important, but the important part is the technical aspects of design, and not just like trying to treat design as art and trying to make things pretty just because you want to make things pretty.
Totally.
One of the things that I've sometimes like made things pretty to achieve is team morale, like improving team morale. Like a lot of times, like people, you know, if you wait to make things pretty later, which I often try to do, you know, because I try to focus on just like making it work first and then making it work better and making it, you know, look good. I find that people are much more excited to work on a product that like feels really nice to them, and not just on the development team, like people on the product team and the sales team, everybody just feels like better about it and prouder of it when there are these little touches that just make it feel really nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think that this is the sort of thing that reinforces the messages or the actions from an application. And also it just makes me feel that the application is more mature or polished.
Yeah, and to Chris's point, like as a team, you feel proud to show it off and send it to like friends and people you care about.
So I think I have one more question. I think this will be a question for everybody too. Crystal, I am curious about what's the last thing that you worked on that you spent probably about, you know, 5 to 10 times as long playing with it as you did building it, where you just got carried away and it took over your entire.
Okay, so basically I was working on this image upload component. And you could like reorder the images. So there was a drag and drop feature after you uploaded the images. And I found it was so cool to implement like this little like animations for example, that you could, after you uploaded the images, you could actually select some of the images that were on your newly built gallery. And then the way that you could select it was that there was this icon on hover. And when you clicked on it, the icon went from like a check mark to an X or something like that. And there was a lot of like small details like that, you know, the things that you could play around when you're like clicking or dragging, dropping and this kind of thing. And I spent a lot of time playing around, like just clicking maniacally on the button to see, see what happens. So this was the last thing.
So this is an optional one for other people. I'm not going to make you answer this one. But does anybody else have a good story like that?
Yeah, I think I have one. I was actually trying to play with Web Speech API with the voice recognition, and I was trying to make an IoT device. It was a particle photon to blink with a color I'm naming right now. I spent like, I think, 30 minutes building the API, and I played like for the whole day because it was so funny. You just say yellow and it blinks yellow. And also it involved my son. He was totally happy commanding the device to blink with a certain color. So it was a great toy.
All right. I think the last one that I really just like spent way too much time on was actually like not even web development. I think it was an like magic move for the VueConf talk. Like when I started having like transforms that went back and forth, like between the different code examples, I just go back and forth. These are my sound effects that I added that they weren't in the slides. I try to do my own sound effects for my slides, you know, sort of like a lot of actors do their own stunts. I feel like it's more pro that way.
I'm totally going to use sound effects from now on.
I can't help it. Like I end up doing a lot of sound effects when I'm playing with animations and showing them to people. All right. So Crystal, where can people find you on the internets?
Pretty much everywhere. I guess that like Googling my name will bring all of the social media things. So I'm on Twitter. I'm also on Medium and GitHub. Everywhere is Crystal Campioni without spaces. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find.
Excellent. It's all spelled the same?
Exactly the same.
Beautiful. That's what I like to do too.
Easier that way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Natalia.
Yes.
I was just giving you a hard time because you have different names in different places.
No, actually not.
You have, what about Tertia?
Oh my God, it's just a nickname from the World of Warcraft and it's just on Discord.
Well, okay. I can't remember if Ben and Didier have different names. I'm not going to give them a hard time. I can't recall.
No, I've camped out all my Ben Code Zen ones, so I'm happy with that.
And I think, Divi, you're short div everywhere, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty much short div everywhere. I think I own that now.
I think it's you, yeah. It's your brand.
Brand. It's my brand. I always forget that it has like the term short in it, because everyone's like, oh yeah, you are short. And I was like, why would you say that? And then I realized.
It seems really rude until.
Gosh.
Why did you decide to use this nickname?
It's like, it's just because in high school there were two Divias and I was the shorter one. And so someone called me short div and I just started getting into web development. And so it like kind of stuck.
I like it.
Yeah.
Nice.
This episode is brought to you by TripleByte. Applying to programming jobs sucks. You have to put the right keywords in your resume. You spend hours and hours on the phone screens and take home projects. And that's assuming the company even responds to your application. Well, if you're a software engineer, TripleByte can help. They work with over 400 top tech companies, from big names like Dropbox and Adobe to exciting startups. You do one brief online interview with them. And if you do well, you go straight to final interviews with the company on their platform. It's like the Common App for software developers. TripleByte does not look at your resume or where you went to school. All they care about is if you can code. I've helped dozens of software developers with various credentials get jobs, and this looks like a terrific way for you to get in and get interviewed and get a job without a lot of the hassle and overhead. You can go check them out at triplebyte.com/view. That's triplebyte.com, byte as in 8 bits. As a special offer for listeners of this show, if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus.
Let's go on to picks. Ben, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I'll start this week. So I'm actually going to have one pick, which is the book Bad Blood, which is about the Theranos case in Silicon Valley. If you haven't read the book, it's really fascinating. Brian Holt had recommended it actually on Twitter because there's a segment in there where they talk about how they thought they could write the application faster with ActionScript than they could with JavaScript. And it was this, or Flash actually, it was crazy. But yeah, there's also a documentary on HBO if you haven't watched it. Just finished it yesterday. Really great.
I didn't realize the documentary had come out.
Yeah, it's like, even if you've read the book, it gives you more context on things. And so I thought it was super, I enjoyed it a lot.
Cool. Because I've been reading stuff on Theranos, Google's been like, do you want to know about Elizabeth Holmes? And so I've been getting up.
You and I totally need
like, do you know she's married? She's getting married. This is like pictures from when she was like out with her fiance and her wolf. And I was just like,
her wolf.
Her wolf. Yeah.
which is not a wolf.
Okay.
Husky that she claims is like 1%.
She claims 1%. I think when it was like during the downfall of Theranos, she bought a dog and then like basically tried to convince everyone that it was a wolf. And it's kind of weird because like the dog was just walking around the lab, which is really like unclean. And it's very bizarre. It's a bizarre thing.
Cool. So Divya, speaking of bizarre, would you like to give us some bizarre tips? Or not tips, but what do we call them again? I'm having a brain something.
Picks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Cool. So I mentioned the Drasnod shirt earlier, and I would highly recommend getting them. They're pretty cool. There's some really good talks at VueConf, and so when the videos come out, I would like highly recommend it, especially Crystal's one. I thought that was really great. And then also, I think I'm biased here, but I really like Tessa's talk as well. And so I want to plug that. The reason why I say I don't want to be biased is because I helped her with the talk. But she did an absolutely wonderful job. And if anything, I was just like kind of being there as someone that she could rant to if she wanted to rather than, yeah. But those two talks, I think, were like my favorite ones.
Excellent. Natalia, would you like to go next?
Yes. And I have a pretty much obvious pick. This week we have Game of Thrones, first episode of the last season released. So if you haven't watched it, go and try. Ben, it's not for you. I know you are not watching Game of Thrones, but actually you should too. It's really interesting.
I did read the first book.
I read all the books. I mean, like, it's not ended, but still.
I stopped in the middle of the fifth book, but I won't. I can't say why. Spoilers.
Okay.
We'll talk after the show.
Yeah, we'll talk after. Cool. Is that all?
Yes.
All right. My picks are, first, Baba Is You. It's a super, super fun puzzle game that someone got for me recently that is just a ton of fun. It's different from any other puzzle game I've ever played. You're actually manipulating the rules of the puzzle in order to solve the puzzle. So, like, that's like one of the rules is Baba Is You. So there's this like little thing that looks like maybe a cow or something like that, whose name is Baba, and that's you. So that's the thing that you control and move around. And then you can change like what you are to other things, and you can change like instead of wall is stop, you know, you can change wall to other things. And it's so, so good. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just so fun. Definitely check it out if you're interested in puzzle games.
It's on Steam, for those wondering. Windows, Mac, and Mac.
Mac and Mac.
Mac and Mac.
So my other pick is Miriam's talk at VueConf. That's my other one that I just really, 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 really loved. Miriam also did one of my favorite talks last year, and she just nails it out of the park every time. And there are so many like callbacks to other talks and stuff like that. And it's just like, it's so funny and it's so informative. She talks about, similarly to Crystal's talk, like a lot of tools that you can use or features that you can use in CSS to make like really nice design systems and things like that. I think people might be able to tell that I like making things pretty. And I especially like being able to make things pretty in like an easy way. And that's what her talk focuses on. I still feel like in 2019, after being a developer for so long, that I still don't have like systems that make me completely happy with how I like organize design systems. And Miriam is on a whole other level. I really look up to her. She's probably like one of the best people in the world for design systems. So definitely check out that talk. I don't think it's up yet, but if you look on viewmastery.com for Miriam Suzanne, you'll be able to find it. And I also really like Divya and Natalia's talks.
Just had
You're
to say
just
that.
Being polite.
Yes, thank
no,
you.
No, I'm not being polite. Well, actually, I feel very sad that I missed Divya's talk, so I am being polite with Divya's talk,
what?
But I'm sure it was very good. I've always
But you
Divya's
always talk. Miss my talks.
That is not true. This is the only talk I...
No, I think you missed... Was it... No, you missed my Toronto, my Vue Toronto talk too.
No, I didn't. I saw
really?
It.
Really? Okay, cool.
I gave you feedback.
I said, can, I can oh, talk okay. for Toronto. I can talk okay,
okay,
for
okay,
Toronto.
Okay, okay, okay.
This is the only talk of yours that I've ever missed.
Not keeping score it's whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I did see Natalia's and I like Natalia's a lot. If you're interested in building desktop applications with Vue, definitely, definitely, definitely check it out.
And not just Electron, right, Natalia?
Yes, not just Electron.
Yeah, if you're deciding like how you want to start and what you want to use, this is the best resource that I know of. All right. And Crystal, what are your picks for this week?
Okay, so the first pick that I would like to mention is a book called Programmed Inequality by Mary Hicks. And it's basically a really interesting study that talks about how Britain lost its edge in computing because they didn't want women to work with technology. So I think it's a really interesting thing to read, especially now that we have lots of really cool stuff that are trying to bring more women into tech, and it's still a problem. So this book is really, really cool. I can totally recommend it. And the other thing that I would like to mention is that I have a open source state picker written in Vue, and I'm always looking for maintainers. So if people would like to jump in and help, it's called Vue Hotel Date Picker, and it has a lot of really interesting functionalities for blocking dates and allowing check-in and check-out and this kind of thing. So yeah, those are my picks.
Excellent. I'm dropping that in the show notes, the Vue Hotel Date Picker. Cool. Well, thank you, Crystal, for joining us this week.
Thank you guys for having me.
We'll see. Well, we won't see anybody next week because that's not how podcasts work. But we will be talking to you again next week. And until then, thank you for joining us and enjoy the view.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.